So a long time ago in the early 90s, before there were GPS or Google Maps, or even really email for most of us, I went to New York City to visit a friend of mine. And so she had hand-drawn a map and mailed it to me so that I could retrieve the keys to her apartment from a desk at New York University where she was going, because she was going to be in class until 10 o'clock. And so I followed the map and got the keys, and then followed the map to her street in Greenwich Village, and proceeded to try to get into her apartment. I went up five flights. I found apartment 22, and she had said the key kind of worked hard in the lock, so I worked the key, and the key broke off. And I'm a Hoosier in New York City, not really having the tools to deal with such things. So I called the superintendent of the building and then called the locksmith and sat and waited. And the locksmith roars up and, like, looks over at me sitting at this cafe below the apartment building, as if I had, like, Hoosier branded on my forehead or something. So we went upstairs, and we started telling stories to each other as he drilled out the lock. And he went down and got a new lock and brought it back up. And then it came time to pay the bill, and it was $217 bill, cash only. Meanwhile, he had this boxy thing that kept ringing, and it was about this big, and he put it up to his ear, and it was his company telling him to get to the next job. He had one of the first cell phones I had ever encountered. So he took me to the ATM, hit the limit on my bank card and couldn't remember the limit on it, or the PIN number on my credit card. And so he assured me that he did indeed trust me and I could mail him the remainder of the money. And he roared off to the next job. So I went back to the apartment and waited for my friend, who was supposed to get out of class about 10 o'clock. It's a hot New York night, 90 degrees. I'm sitting in front of a fan and I'm waiting. And 10 o'clock comes and goes, and it's headed towards 11 o'clock, and I still haven't seen this friend. So I pick up the phone that's in this apartment, and I dial her number. And she answers the phone. Hello? And I say, where are you? And she says, where are you? And I say, well, obviously I'm in somebody else's apartment. I probably have not known panic such as that before or since. So I quickly gather my things and I go to leave, and I realize that I can't lock the door because there's a new lock on the door and I have both keys. So I leave a note. To whom it may concern. There's no good way to explain this. But I tried, and I left the note and both keys and left the door unlocked and went down five flights of stairs and down the street just a little bit and up five flights of stairs, and there was my friend's apartment. There were two buildings, and I had gone in the wrong one because the buzzer door on the street had the same key, and it worked for both buildings. The locksmith actually did the same thing. I had broken into someone's apartment with the help of a locksmith. Friends have assured me, Marshall, this could only happen to you. I'm like, no, it could happen to anybody. To this day, I've never spoken to this person. I don't know the story that she tells her friends. But despite a map and despite having the keys, I managed to do a very wrong thing and fortunately didn't get arrested.
Because I'm showing a couple images, and I'll use the cordless here. And if I had more than 2 minutes, which I'm told I have, I would talk with you about Iware Oseande, who I had the privilege of hearing at the Mennonite Educators Conference the last few days here at in Washington, D.C. He's the anti-oppression coordinator for MCC and actively is working against racism and oppression. But I don't have those 2 minutes. We can't get there quite from here in 2 minutes. Or I might talk about Drew Hart, who spoke at Goshen College Martin Luther King Day Chapel, and who has a book I have right down here, too, that I'm making my way through about the trouble I've seen about racism in the church currently. We can't get there from here in 2 minutes or even on a Sunday morning to get past this. Hart and both Iware are both calling us to awaken, calling the church to awaken. Instead, I'm going to talk about a trip that Dennis Landis and I took recently to Texas. We did an MDS trip, a Mennonite Disaster Service trip. Dennis, are you here in the room? He volunteers a lot at Bethany, and he helped drive 13 high schoolers and I to Texas, and it was a much longer drive than we really wanted to do, probably. But we didn't arrive seeing this skyline, but we learned about the fire that we were going to help Mennonite Disaster Service rebuild from. And, when adults take a group of kids down and it takes 22 hours to get there, inevitably, tempers and emotions go back and forth in the bus the whole way down, I think. We see different emotions. And Dennis and I were looking for a new way to travel on the way back, and we were doubting Google Maps and the map app. And so we talked to some local people about, like, well, what route can we take? So we found a route on the way back. We're trying to shorten our route. So just to show a little bit of what happened with the fire, Bastrop, Texas is a quarter the size of Goshen, and that's not the town, but the surrounding area's a pine woods that had burned over 1,500 homes. So Mennonite Disaster Service is there working. It's south of Waco, Texas. So we start our trip back at about 3 a.m. We get the students up, and we're following, among other routes, Route 77. So in this picture, you can see a sign on the right-hand side here that says north, go left for Route 77, south 77, go right. So I'm driving, and it's maybe 4:15 in the morning, and the bus is very quiet. And I get to this sign. There's a gas station, and I was like, okay, well, I need to go north. I didn't have my phone app running and Siri or whatever, that wasn't telling me where to go. So I follow Route 77, and, I get out of this town, and all of a sudden the road starts to, get to a smaller, windy road, and we get to another town, and I get to, and sure enough, it says Route 77 again, but even though it felt like I was on a very small back road, and we go north on 77 again, and we turn, and we get back to this intersection. And that was not fun. Everybody's sleeping on the bus, and I'm thinking, this looks pretty familiar. I think I was here, and Dennis, can you wake up? And so look at that sign. I'm going north on 77, so I turn left and go north on 77 instead of checking this out further. We follow the instructions that we had. And we do the exact same thing again, and we arrive at this intersection. And by this time, it's catching the attention of a few of the students in the bus, too. And they're like, what is going on? And so we actually, before we arrived back at this intersection, we saw a sign we arrived there three times, didn't we? Yeah. So we followed it again, and we went through it, and we get back. But on the way back on the third time, we see a sign that says Waco, Texas, with an arrow that goes straight ahead. But there's no sign for 77 going straight ahead. So we decide to just go straight through the intersection. And then, outside of this town, we see a sign, 77 north. And I like to call it Waco, Texas, a little bit now. But we think we encountered the Bermuda Triangle of Texas. And there we go. So that's my story.